She said, when the sunrise comes falling, when the midnight comes calling.
Yo, what's good, everybody? It's your host, James Meeks, and we're back for another episode of your favorite Black Fatherhood podcast.
Yes, sir. And what's good, everybody? It's your co-host, Jesse Alex, also the co-founder of Dear Fathers, the premier media platform for Black Fatherhood. Thanks for tapping in.
Before we get into this dope conversation today, I need y'all to go and subscribe and follow us anywhere you get your podcast today. Jesse, let's dive right in, bro. That's right. Yo, yo, welcome back to another episode of the Dear Fathers podcast. I'm your host, James Meeks. We're excited about another impactful conversation. But before we get started, I got to check in with my boy, Jesse. How you feeling today, bro?
Bro, I'm feeling good, man. As always, man, looking forward to the conversation with this dope guest that we got on. I feel like we haven't really had that many music artists on. I feel like we had a lot of athletes, actors. So to talk to another person in the music industry about who they are as a Black father, man, I'm excited about the convo today.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited about this one too, man. So let's hop right into it. We'd like to welcome a super dope hip hop artist, two-time Grammy Award winner, and amazing father, Lecrae, to the Dear Fathers podcast. How you doing today, Lecrae?
Wonderful, man. Appreciate y'all. Thank y'all for having me, bro.
Oh, no, we definitely just excited and honored to have you, man. Somebody with, you know, your background, your experience, the accolades you've had, man. It's a blessing to be able to have this conversation with you, man. So jumping right into it, we love to kind of take it back to the beginning. We want to understand more about your upbringing. So talk to us about your upbringing, where you grew up at, and what was your relationship like with your pops?
I grew up a little bit everywhere. So my mom and my dad, they linked up as youngins, you know, as kids trying to figure out what to do. This was in Houston, Texas. So started off in Houston. Obviously, it didn't work out between the two of them. And my mom went to stay with family in Denver. So I stayed in Denver for a while. Then we went to San Diego. So I stayed in San Diego, California. And eventually migrated back to Texas. So I pretty much lived most of my life between, you know, Texas, Denver, and California, Southern California. So that's, you know, a lot of the areas I grew up, mostly in, you know, in an urban environment. Didn't grow up with my pops. He wasn't involved. He didn't come around much. Actually, he came around once when I was 9, and I met him, and then he disappeared, you know, and I never saw him again until I was a grown man. Never really kept in touch with him. From what I understand, you know, he spent a lot of time battling his addictions, incarcerated, and, you know, just being on the streets. And so it's been a journey of just not knowing what that's going to look like in my life.
Yeah, no, and that's I appreciate you sharing, giving us that background. So I want to kind of touch on that meeting you had with your pops at 9. And, you know, Jesse has like similar experiences with his father too, not having a great relationship with his dad and, you know, meeting him sparingly throughout his life. Did you know that you was going to meet him at age 9, or did that just kind of randomly happen?
Nah, it was random. You know, it was a really random occurrence. I think he was up. He was in a good season of life. And so he was like, let me come by, say what's up to my son, take him shopping. And it got my hopes up, you know, because before you know anything, you think your dad is a superhero. You know, you just imagine that he's off somewhere being awesome and you just want to go be with him. And so when he swooped in my life at 9 and took me shopping, took me to meet my grandmother for the first time and his siblings, it was like, wow, you know, this is about to be awesome. And then he disappeared and I never saw him again.
Yeah, man, that's a crazy story. And like James said, I have, you know, similar experiences in my upbringing with my pops as far as just, you know, seeing him here and there, him being, you know, in the streets and doing other things that, you know, didn't make him available as he should have been as a dad. My question to you, man, and it's something that I kind of think about with myself. So I just want to ask you, like, as an adult now, as a father now, how much grace do you kind of give your pops just for what he was going through and understanding like, hey, these are the reasons that he weren't, you know, wasn't around. Do you resent him at all for that? Or do you kind of give him grace in knowing that he wasn't, you know, where he needed to be there for you like he should have been?
Yeah, that's a really good question, man. I think it's interesting because I have two other siblings by him, and we all have unique perspectives. You know, there's one of us who feels like I'm done with him, that like he's trash. He just wasn't around, and I wish he was never involved ever in my life. There's another who's like, the little experiences I've had with him are not good. So I don't know what to think. And then there's me who's like, I want to be gracious to him and give him the benefit of the doubt because there's just a lot of questions I have. So I wanted some questions answered. I think that's what made me more gracious. It's like, I don't really know your story. I don't know what happened. I know like what my mom is, she gave me a snapshot, but I don't know your relationship with your dad. So there's so much I didn't know that gave me like a little room to be gracious to him and not just write him all the way off.
Yeah, no, I feel that wholeheartedly, man. And I'm kind of in that same point where it's like, I don't know that full story. You know what I'm saying? So I can't piece everything together. I just kind of know what I know, man. So I definitely get you there. And just thinking about this song you got, Just Like You, man, you touched on growing up without a father in that song. You know, you spoke on in that song is about your uncles, right? Kind of providing that father figure like experience for you. At what age did you really like realize like having those father figures in your life and your uncles? Like at what age did you realize that that was like super important for like your growth?
I definitely was an adult. You know what I mean? I think I was, you know, I don't know, probably like somewhere in my 20s where I was like, oh, shoot. Like if I didn't have them, there's so many gaps that would have been, you know, not filled in. And, you know, I learned a lot of negative stuff too, with, you know, of course, but they were young. So it was kind of like being raised by boys in a sense yourself. But yeah, they filled in some crucial gaps for me. And one of them I think is really just like being able to weather the storm. You know, that was something that my mom really was, she was like, I don't know how to raise a man. So she would send me to live with them. And, you know, it was just, how do you weather a storm? How do you keep pushing? You know, how do you not go cry to mama every time the world feels like it's about to come to an end? So I think that was really important for me during that season.
Yeah, that's really dope, man. I think, you know, when we talk about fathers and, you know, people always kind of point to like biological fathers to kind of give us, you know, all of the thanks and the praise for helping raise up children. But, you know, it's oftentimes other people who may not be the biological father kind of step in and make sure that, you know, a child has what they need. And I think anybody can provide that fatherly guidance or that mentorship to whether it's young boys, young girls, whatever it might be. And it really comes back to that community. Like, you know, us being a community coming together and helping pulling each other up. So I'm you know, glad that you had your uncles around kind of show you things, even if, you know, they were trying to figure it out on their own too. You know, eventually it got you to be what ended up being a great human being. So, you know, hats off to them and salute to them for that. But now kind of jumping into your music career, you know what I mean? Like you've had a lot of success, man. You know, 99% of the world can't say that they won a Grammy, right? But what was your mama made it moment for you in life that you really felt like, you know what, I'm here now?
That's a good question. You know, I think it's being able to provide significantly for my mother, you know what I'm saying? So it was kind of like, you know, getting that check and being like, oh shoot, like, mom, I'm about to cancel your debts right now. You know what I mean? And just being able to cancel some debts for her was a mama I made a moment for me, you know? And it's like the awards and everything is cool, but at the end of the day, those are trophies. It's the legacy, whether it's financial legacy, emotional, relational legacy that you can leave behind. That's really like the powerful part of it. You know, it's that healing that you can provide for somebody, that peace you can bring to them that says, okay, you know, the investment paid off. And I think, you know, being able to cancel debts for her after all the sacrifices she went through, you know, to raise me as a single mom. And even, you know, because there was a season in my life where I did have a stepdad. I mean, they're not together now, but even in that season, he didn't know how to be a present father either. So it was still like she was a single mom, you know what I mean? So just to pay her back for that was special for me. That was my mama I made it moment. I mean, the Grammys and all that stuff was cool. Being able to take your mama to the Grammys is high on, that's dope. But, you know, you can pay it forward. It's like something real special.
Yeah, no, that's really dope, man. And I think we all live for that. You know, you want to be in a position where you can pay your parents back all the things and the sacrifices they made, man. So I definitely think that's amazing, man. And it just shows, you know, you know, type of person you are to want to have that. You know, you got an autographed jersey of Steph Curry behind your head, man. But your moment is being able to take care of your moms, man. That's really dope. All right, so then to keep it going, man, a lot of people, you know what I mean, normally see and they recognize accomplishments and achievements, you know what I mean? So you've been very successful. But one thing we always like to talk about is, you know what I mean, the process. Because people can see the end result. They can see the success. And they figure like, oh, okay, this happened overnight. But, you know, there's often many things, trials and tribulations, ups and downs that happen, you know what I mean, throughout that process. So we want to know from you, like, was there ever a point in your journey, your career, where it wasn't going so well and you felt like giving up? And if so, how did you overcome that?
Yeah, so I have a real unique situation. You know, it's like a professional athlete or athlete, you know, goes to high school, wants to go to college, gets to college, wants to play pro ball, gets to play pro ball, wants to win the title, wins the title, starts balling. Cause it's like, I worked so hard for this my whole life. You know, all the setbacks, all the trials. And for me, you know, it was like a pipe dream to want to rap, you know, to want to do music for a living. So when I was able to pay my bills by making music, I felt like I had won already. So anything that came after that was like, whoa. Like, I remember, like, I was working at a cable company and, you know, divine circumstance happened to where they was like, hey, we doing away with this department. Do you want to take a severance check or you want to move to a different department? And I'm thinking to myself, yo, I'm wrapping up this album. I'm gonna take the severance check and see what this music does, because I got 3 months to really make it happen. And so I took those 3 months and got on my grind. And you know, my bills was basically rent. And then, you know, you could eat ramen noodles and be fine. You know what I mean? So as long as I had a show where I could pay my rent and eat, I was good. And so I've always just been really fortunate. Like, every step of the way is more than I expected. You know, it wasn't like I was chasing something like a pro athlete would. Every step has been like, wow. The downside is when you've tasted success and you can't always replicate that. You know what I mean? So that's the hard part, is in your mind where you're like, all right, we just won a Grammy, or we had a number one album. Let's do it again. Well, you can't always replicate what happened. You know, you got a number one, you got a Grammy. Making it happen again can be tough. So I think that's where, you know, the battle comes in. Is like, man, can I still keep that up?
Nah, that makes total sense, man. But first, salute to you for betting on yourself when you got that severance check to say, all right, I'm going to, you know, go get these shows. I'm going to do what I need to do. So salute to you for just betting on yourself, man. That's dope. And I agree with what you're saying. It's kind of always hard to chase that accomplishment that you had in the past, right? Like, I always say that, whether it's artists, whether it's athletes like LeBron, like, he know what it feels like to be at the top, to win that chip. For years like this where he don't get there, it's like now he's chasing that again. You're always chasing that success, I feel like, as athletes and artists. Like, you know, the great music artists out there that, like, you know, had all these successful albums, I always wonder what that thought process is in making that new album. Like, are you thinking about them old ones that you had? Like, I always wonder what that's like. And to that point, a person like yourself, you've had a very successful career over a long period of time, which I feel like is a hard to do for a lot of artists. What do you, you know, credit your longevity to?
Honestly, man, I had this philosophy a long time ago where it's like, man, I'm never in the music business. I'm always in the people business. And whatever business you're in, if you see it like you're in the people business, you'll always be successful because you're taking care of people. You know what I'm saying? So if you look out for the people, if I'm in a, you know, I'm soft drink business, I'm in the people business. What do they want to drink? What flavors do they like? And how can I make sure I take care of them? It's just that whole model of the customer's always right, you know, in a sense where it's like, man, let me take care of these people. So I could make the songs that, you know, say what everybody else is saying or sonically good, but I'm like, nah, I'm gonna bare my soul and I'm gonna put some real meat into this because I know somebody needs to hear this. And then they connect to it. And then they like, man, this song is my story. You know, like, just like you, it's like this fatherless story of this kid trying to figure out what it means to be a man without his dad. that connects to somebody, and then they tell somebody, and they tell somebody, people feel like, man, you made this for me, and you start creating that music that heals. And so, you know, whether you're an artist that, if you make music for the club, then do that, because, you know, when you start trying to do what's not you, you people have an expectation, like, you make me dance. Every time I hear your music, I want to dance. Like, we'll do that. If you make people laugh, make them laugh to the best of your ability. And for me, I'm like, man, I'm a transparent, vulnerable artist who want to bring healing to folks. So that's the longevity, is people feel like, man, I know this dude, I connect with this dude, and he brings something to me that's helpful and healing, and that keeps the train moving.
Yeah, that's really dope, man. And to do it for as long as you have, I think that's amazing, man. Especially doing it as a Christian hip hop artist. You know what I mean? Like, you know, being in the Christian space, especially as a hip hop artist, is tough. It's difficult, bro. And I remember, you know, Jesse and I talked about, you know, being in Atlanta. I moved to Atlanta in 03. I think I first came across your music from a buddy of mine in college at like 2005. So to know that you're still here and still relevant in 2021 is crazy, because think how much music has changed sonically and everything from that time to now. So to continue to find a space, I think that's really dope. And I think it kind of goes back to your point, which is that you stay true to yourself. You didn't chase the trends. You didn't chase what everybody else was doing, because that's how you get lost in the sauce.
Yeah, big time, man. And another part of that too is like, you know, you got to be a student of your craft. And I think a lot of times, unfortunately, in the Christian space, people are like, well, I'm talking about God, so everybody should love me. No, you need to be dope. You need to be dope at what you do, and earn the right for people to listen to you. You know what I mean? Like, yo, this music dope. Let me listen to what they're talking about. Earn that right. So that's how I've always felt, is, man, let me be dope in my craft and continue building and learning.
Yeah, and I actually think it's probably more difficult to be respected in the Christian hip hop space than it was if you was just in regular hip hop. Because in regular hip hop, we kind of just let anybody in.
That's true.
Like, we hold you on a different pedestal when you talking and, you know, rapping about God and making music about God. So, like I said,
it's already just, like, I don't really know if I want to listen to this. Right. So you're right. I remember I was at a practice for a pro basketball team, and I was just hanging out, and I had some mixtapes with me. And I remember I was like about to pass out the mixtapes, and one of the coaches was like, hey, bro, we got this gospel rapper. He got some mixtapes for y'all. And I was like, oh, you shouldn't have said that. You know what I mean? Like, that was a wrong thing to say. And so the whole team's like, I'm good. And that, you know, to me, that put a chip on my shoulder, because I'm like, all right, bet, if they already have this idea that, you know, somebody who acknowledges their faith in their music is going to be lame or whack, then let me change that landscape and let me make it dope. And that's what I've, you know, been fighting to do ever since.
Yeah, man, that's really dope, bro. So, yo, man, we definitely want to get into this conversation and why we really had you here today. Definitely love tapping into your background and learning more about, you know, your upbringing. But, you know, this is a Dear Fathers podcast, man. So we definitely want to talk about, you know, you as a father. So our first question is, who is Lecrae as a father?
Oh, man. You know, I'm really, I'll be honest with you, transparently. People think I'm a phenomenal dad and a phenomenal parent. And it's mostly because I'm parenting out of the fear of becoming my father. You know what I'm saying? And so it's like every trip to the beach or walk in the park or football game means way more to me probably than the average person, because I'm like, yo, I never got this. So this is like, I'm getting to live my childhood through you in a sense. Like I don't know what it feels like to have a dad at the game. Like, that's right, go ahead. So I'm all in. And people are like, man, you're so good, you're so involved. And I'm like, bro, this is like, I never saw this. So I'm like, you know, so man, I'm at all the things I can be at. When my kids have an interest, I'm like, all right, let's ride this thing to the full out. My son got in a skateboard, and I'm like, bet, let's go. Let's take you to skate parks. Let's go fly to Florida and go to this skate camp. And like, if you like it, I love it. You know, whatever you're into. And for me, it's like some people would say, man, why are you, you know, invested so much in things that they may not continue pursuing? But I'm like, better to invest in something they're pursuing than them just sitting at home not having a desire. You know what I'm saying? So I'm all in. I'm that type of dude.
Nah, that's dope, man. And I love to hear that because I feel like what you're saying is what I hear from a lot of guys. And I think there was a generation, right, that like there was absent fathers. So there's a lot of men that's growing up now becoming fathers and being fathers with a chip on their shoulder. It's like, I wanna be the dad that I didn't have. And I hear a lot of my homeboys say that. It's like, I never seen this. So every trip to the game or to the water park or whatever, it's like, you know, it's just building my points up in my dad game in a sense. So nah, it's like guys got a chip on their shoulder, but that's good, man, because it makes it competitive. It makes guys active, and it's creating change. It's changing the narrative, man. So salute to you for that. And I think I read something a little while back, you talking about your kids and social media and not putting them on social. But I feel like now you kind of adjusted. You post your kids a little bit more on social, which I love to see because that lets people know or lets people see who you are as a dad online. What kind of shift did that change in your thought process there?
Yeah, I think, you know, I was limiting it initially, like, well, let me let them grow up and have their own identity before I let the world shape it for them. And before they're known as Lecrae's kids, let me let them establish some friendships, some relationships. And I feel like they have that, you know, so that stuff is sturdy now to where it's not like when they see somebody sees them out, the first thing they think of is, oh, that's Lecrae's kid. It's like, that's my man. That's you know, David or Landon or Maya, you know, they know them as who they are. And then you right, like I want to be able to show other fellas out there, like, hey, this is what it can look like. You know what I'm saying? And yes, a lot of times it looks like the highlight reel because people don't see the hard parts about being a parent because it is rough. It's tough. You know, you have to have a desire to want to be better than what you saw. And some of that stuff is hard. But I let them, you know, and I don't let them on social media like they know. And if I'll show it to you, you know what I'm saying? Because I don't got time for all that extra trauma and drama in my life. But yeah, I've been letting them pop up more.
Oh, that's interesting. So have you and your wife like set an age where you'll let the kids be on social?
Yeah. So for me, I feel like, you know, I really want my kids to have a firm grasp of their identity and their worth and their value without it being attached to likes. And you know, I think that it can create a lot of insecurity in kids who are still developing and still trying to figure out their worth. I mean, we dealt with it without social media as kids, just in schools, like the popularity contest, the cool kids and all that type of stuff. And so now it's like accelerated to another level to where it's like, man, you know, your followers can create a sense of, or your likes and follows can create a sense of identity for you. So for me, I'm like, man, let me help you develop your identity outside of all these kids who are still trying to figure themselves out. So why add more criticism and judgment and false love to your world? You know what I mean? So, yeah, I feel like, you know, probably, you know, it really is going to depend on their maturity level. You know what I'm saying? Like, as I gauge their maturity level, it's like, all right, I can see where you are. And this may be something that you can get involved
in. Yeah, I think that's a great approach. And I think, you know, it seems like us as parents nowadays, we don't really slow down enough to think about those things. But it's very different now growing up than what it was when we were growing up. You know what I mean? And kids are exposed to a lot more. And social media is a large part why. You get to see, you get free reign to see and feel anything you want to feel on social media nowadays, man. So I think that's a great approach. I can remember like a year or so ago, we were in Texas at the time and we stopped through a church. And, you know, my oldest was 9 at the time. And, you know, he kind of went back with the kids and finished up. I went to go pick him up. And the youth pastor was like, hey, man, like, I just want to commend you because, you know, we were talking about Instagram and Snapchat in here and your son didn't know what none of that was. And I was like, that's purposeful, man. Like,
yeah.
What does he need exposure to that for at 9 years old? Like, what is he going to learn on there that I'm not going to know about? So I'd rather him just be in his own world, be a kid, let kids be kids, and then give them those things when the time is right, man. So yeah. I definitely think the approach you're taking is the right one, man. Especially, you're a celebrity too, so people gonna be talking crazy to your kids and all kind of silly stuff.
Oh man, even with phones, like I have one teenager, you know, a 13-year-old, and even with phones, I'm like, I got him the most bare bones phone. You can't do really nothing but call. You know what I'm saying? So, because I'm like, why would I put the world in your hands like that? You know what I'm saying? It could be a terror or a tool, but you don't know how to use it as a tool yet. So it's right. just going to be a terror for you. And I'm like, nah, you don't need that. I just need to get in touch with you. You need to get in touch with me. And you know, you can call your friends, you know what I'm saying? And communicate with them, but you don't need the whole world at your fingertips at any given moment. That's just a dangerous thing to have.
Yeah, it is for sure, man. I remember I'm 33. So I remember like growing up in high school and stuff. It wasn't no social media. Like I didn't get on Facebook until like, I think after I graduated high school or something like that. And then there was like MySpace where you had like your top five friends. Y'all remember that? Like that was a whole big thing. Like the top five.
MySpace, baby.
Yeah. It's crazy, man. But like kids growing up today, like they literally growing up in that world already. It's kids who 9, 10 years old with phones and they basing their stuff off likes and YouTube and all that. So I couldn't imagine. It could be a gift or curse, like y'all saying, man. So I commend both of y'all on just kind of the road y'all taking as far as, you know, pushing y'all kids through that journey and just making sure that they're ready for it when that time comes. And just even talking about Lecrae, your children growing up, right? And maturing and having their own thoughts, passions. Do you want them to, you know, get into the music industry? Is that something that you see for them? Or is it kind of just like, you know, you want them to just pursue whatever it is that they want to pursue?
Yeah. I mean, genetics is crazy, man. Genetics is a beast. And it's wild how it works. So all three of my kids definitely have inherited artistic leanings. You know, they're artistically gifted in different ways. Yeah. And it's really about how they're going to pursue that leaning. And I want to encourage that. When it comes to the music, you know, I have two of them that have kind of leaned toward production. And for me, you know, I'm with it and I support them. But at the same time, I want them to do what they're passionate about. You know what I mean? And not do it because daddy's doing it. But there's also what you see, like a person who runs who owns, you know, a family business. It's like you give your kid the opportunity to jump in the family business if they want that. So I'm also like, hey, I'm training them to understand the family business. And so, hey, yeah, this is how you do this. And this is what this is. And, you know, if you produce, this is what this can look like. And so I told them, if you create something halfway decent, I'm going to give you your first placement on one of my projects, you know, and we move forward like that. And also, man, that's what I give them allowance for. I don't give them allowance for doing chores. It's like, I don't want to teach them to do work they hate in order to get paid. I want to teach them to do what they love and get paid for that. So if you love basketball, cool. You get out there and you practice hard and you we come up with some goals. And if you hit your goals, then I give you an allowance for hitting the goals in the thing that you love versus, you know, sweep the floor. And it's like, now I'm training you to like, man, my whole life, I'm gonna have to do something I hate in order to get paid, you know?
Bro, that's deep.
That's deep.
I never thought about it like that. That's deep.
Yeah.
You just changed my whole perspective on allowance for my kid, man. Cause I just watched and you're right though. And I remember getting allowance as a kid too. And it was always for the things that I didn't care anything about, you know what I mean? And it was like, oh, well, you know, you do the dishes, take the trash out, clean up the house and you get $20 or $30, whatever it is. And now I took that because that's what I was accustomed to, kind of brought that over to my oldest. The two youngest don't get allowance yet, but I like what you just said, and I'm gonna flip it. I'm gonna talk to my wife and flip it. I think that's a better approach. Cause now you're changing that mindset, and they thinking about going after things they passionate about, and then okay, I can be rewarded for that if I try really hard at it.
Man, it's like y'all right now with this with this, you know, podcast is something y'all passionate about, something that y'all burden to do, and y'all put time and energy into it, and you see a reward on the other end. And that's what I want my kids to feel. The same thrill y'all get is what I want them to feel. Like, man, this is dope. I need to get better and better and better at this because it's rewarding.
Yeah, that's really dope, bro. So appreciate that, Jim, for real. Yeah. So we have a special segment that we like to do at Dear Fathers, man. We call it Dads in Delivery. And so what we want you to do is take us back to your first child and tell us how you felt physically, mentally, and emotionally as your child was being born.
Oh, man, it's crazy because I remember feeling like before my son was born, I was thinking, yo, I'm in love with the person I've never seen. You know what I'm saying? Like, and that has spiritual connotations too. I ain't never seen God either, and I love God. You know what I'm saying? So I was like, yo, I never seen this kid, and I love him. And so you're waiting on the revealing of somebody you are in love with. You know, I've been talking to you through your mama's stomach for all this time, and then it's like, oh, shoot, you are here. You know, and I was bugging out because I remember he came out the womb, and I was like, I see myself. Immediately I saw the resemblance. That's what was crazy too. Like, I mean, you know, a very pink version of myself, but you know what I'm saying? It was like, yo, this is crazy. Like, this is a whole human being. And, you know, I felt a sense of responsibility. I felt like, man, I was ready for, I was like, oh, this is real. Like, you know, I cut the umbilical cord. I was like all in, like, man, I'm so ready for this moment. Like, this is wild. I spent the night on the couch in the hospital and just felt like this is really here, you know. One thing I will say is that, you know, not to digress too much, but I remember my son being born and feeling possessive, like he's mine. And I think we have to be careful as fathers to think like this child is mine and I'm gonna mold them in the way I want them to be. I think you have to pause and say, no, I've been entrusted to guide this child. This is not my child. I'm entrusted to shape and mold, and then I have to let them go. I have to send them off. So, you know, I got possessive, like, oh, you're going to do this, and I'm going to have you like this. And you know, you do that with your babies. I'm going to put you in the J's, and you're a reflection of me. But then they get older, they're like, nah, I'm me. I'm myself. I'm not you. You know what I mean? And you got to be okay with that.
Nah, that's solid, bro. And we love to hear stories like that because a lot of times, you know, dads in delivery is based on, a lot of times we only hear the mother side of things, right? We never really hear how Black men feel in the delivery room. So thank you for sharing that, man. And you said something earlier about like social media just kind of always being the highlights. So take us to, you know, your biggest struggle, your biggest challenge in fatherhood, and how did you overcome it?
I'm still overcoming it, man. I'm a very insecure father because I don't have like a reference point. You know what I'm saying? It's not like I have this. I mean, there's books and there's people you've seen do it from afar, but then you have your own trauma that you brought into this family. You got your own baggage. And, you know, you definitely get counseling, get therapy if you got baggage before, because that baggage is going to fall on your kids. So I'm extremely insecure. You know, I'm always questioning, am I doing good enough? Am I doing this right? And so that creates problems for me internally. And then, of course, you think, like, if you just follow all the right steps, your child's going to come out perfect. And it's just not true. They're going to have their struggles. They're going to have their issues, and their rebellion. And so you got to be, for me, I've had to be okay with being gracious to them and being loving and being patient and hearing them out. And then also, man, I've had to apologize a lot and just say, yo, daddy didn't grow up with a daddy. So daddy's trying to figure a lot of this stuff out. So I want to apologize to you because I tell you one story specifically. You know, I was raised by some young animals, not animals, that's bad, but some young, you know, warriors. And they was, you know, they was in the streets. And so they just taught me like manhood was being aggressive and being tough. And so that was baked into my DNA. And my son was probably six, playing with some 8-9-year-olds, and they got a little rough, and he ran away and he cowered and he cried. And I chastised him and I was like, hey boy, don't you come over here crying. Like, get back out there and play with them. Like, stop being a little baby, you know? And I had to come back and apologize to him because he walked away feeling like it was wrong to be scared. It's wrong to be afraid. It's wrong to cry. And I sat him down and I said, hey man, I want to tell you something. Daddy gets scared sometimes too. He's like, what? You know, like, for real? And I said, yeah, daddy gets scared sometimes too. But, you know, daddy was afraid that you would not be able to grow up and handle yourself. And that's not true. So, you know, it's little stuff like that where I had to just apologize and then course correct. And man, that's a part of life, is just learning how to do that for life.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, man. And I think that's something that, you know, we as men just have to continue to do a better job of. You know, a lot of us are grown, we were raised and we grew up to be tough and to not show emotion and to, you know, almost like make you feel less than if you show emotion or if you say you're sorry or you apologize for something, man. But I think to your point, that's one of the biggest things I've learned as a father as well, is not being afraid to open up to my children, let them know that when I'm wrong, when I do something wrong, if I say something wrong, like to apologize to them and show them that it's okay to do that. I want my sons to know that it's okay to do that. I want my daughter to know that it's okay to do that. And I think us as men, we almost gotta like reprogram ourselves from what we were conditioned to be our entire lives, which are these super aggressive, tough beings where like there are times for those things.
Right.
But you know, at the end of the day, man, like, you know, your kids are a reflection of what they see from you. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And the things that you put out are what they're gonna take, and they're gonna go and take that same energy and put it into the world when they become adults too. So we got to be mindful of what we put out because it's definitely going to impact them directly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even I want to ask you something based on what you just said, as far as that insecurity, do you have like a support group of like friends, or do you see a therapist that helps you kind of like get those thoughts out?
Yeah. All of that. Like I've gone to therapy. I have a therapist on speed dial when needed. You know what I mean? But then I do have we do a lot of what I call integrated living. And integrated living is when you just like, yo, I got friends and my wife has friends and we get together, we do lunches or dinners or parties or whatever. And, you know, we'll integrate it. It's not just going to be cards and, you know, cupcakes and wine or something like that. It's going to be conversations about parenting and what you're doing, what's houses. To make ourselves feel normal, like, oh, it's not just me. So how have you dealt with that? Or what you do with this? And so it's not like this super, I mean, there can be intentional times, but it's definitely like, how do we just bring it into the conversation so that we all can help each other? And that's what we do. You know what I mean? It's like, even it was funny this Sunday at church, you know, it's a man who, he don't even really know our family like that, but it's just, we're so communal. My son was walking through the door in front of his grandmother and an older gentleman grabbed his arm and was like, hey, young man, let your grandmother walk in before you do. You know what I mean? It's just like, that's what I feel like my friends do for me with my kids. It's like, you know, we help each other's kids out when we see other things, because it can be exhausting and definitely takes a village.
Yeah, no, that's dope. And what you said, I thought was perfect as far as just kind of, you know, everything doesn't have to be like a clinical sit down with a therapist. It can just be just creating spaces to have those conversations, even if it's just with friends. And I feel like that's what we're doing here with the platform, is just creating spaces for these conversations to be had. And I think that's what's going to help continuously shift the narrative and change things and help everybody grow together, man. So salute you for doing so. And, you know, real quick, so this episode is actually sponsored by one of our partners, Fly Dad, whose mission is to help dads preserve their swag as they navigate life with their kids. So what does being a Fly Dad to you, man, mean to you? Like, what's your dad swag on, man? What's that mean to you?
Hey, man, it definitely, part of it means like not giving up. I think a lot of us give up in terms of fashion or culture or knowing what's going on in our kids' spaces and play, and we just be like, man, I'm just gonna be a dad. You know what I mean? I don't care no more. I'm going for comfort. I'm going for function over fashion. You know,
no balances.
It's like, man, I'm just gonna get the straight cut. You know, forget it. I put it on the khakis. You know, or the jeans and loafers. I'm done. I'm out the game. You know, give me my Bluetooth necklace, and I'm just gonna sit on the couch and drink my beer, and I'm out. It's like, no, sir. Being a fly daddy, staying in the mix, then staying a part of the culture, understanding what's going on. You know what I'm saying? I look at Jay-Z. What are you, like 53, something like that? Will Smith in his 50s, man. If they still can rock it, man, you can rock it. So keep it going.
For sure, man. That's dope, man. And I think, you know, to the dads out there, stay with it, man. Don't throw on the sweatsuit and the New Balances too soon, man. You got your whole life for that, man. Well, another segment that we love to do here with our guest Lecrae is we like to write like hypothetical letters to our fathers, man. And I think, you know, considering the relationship that you have with yours, we would love to get your stance on it. So, if you could write a letter to your father, starting with "Dear Father," what would you say?
Dear Father, I understand that life must have been very difficult, you know, in the 70s and 80s in terms of race and culture and how to navigate being a Black man in society. And I understand that relationships are hard. But I would say that having my kids in my life is one of the biggest joys I could have ever imagined. And, you know, it's something that I wish that you would have had the opportunity to understand and to cherish. And, you know, there's always grace today for yesterday's mistakes, but that comes with owning, you know, responsibility and embracing some of the areas where you've dropped the ball. And you can own it, then you can grow, and we can all grow.
Oh, man, thank you for that, man. That's a very important to what we do, is having guys write that letter to their dad. And it's always super therapeutic to hear those letters, man, whether somebody's had a good relationship with their dad, a recovering relationship, or didn't have a relationship at all. So appreciate your transparency there, man, and being vulnerable and writing that letter to your pops. And before we get out of here, man, we want to just do some rapid fire questions with you, man. Get to know you a little bit more on a just random topic level, man. So sure. First one, man, top three TV shows all time. What's Lecrae's top three TV shows all time?
Top three TV shows of all time?
Yeah.
All right. Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. That's definitely one of the top. Martin.
Okay.
And shoot. What I'm going to run with after? Oh, Chappelle Show. I mean, that's. Okay.
Yeah. I got you. Next one. Top three cereals of all time. Favorite cereals.
Captain Crunch with the Crunch Berries.
Hey.
No games. Play Captain Crunch with the Crunch Berries. Then we're going to go with I just had it in my brain. Lucky Charms and Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Okay, you can't go wrong with them three, man. I'm fans of all three. Last one, man, your favorite sneaker of all time. Your favorite all-time sneaker, what's that?
Favorite all-time sneaker. I'm going to say that Air Max 95s, bro. I love some 95s. You know what I'm saying? That's probably just.
Never go wrong with
95s,
bro.
Yeah, I love
95s
too.
Yeah.
No, that's solid. Well, I actually do got one more for you based on what's in your background, man. You got a Steph Curry signed jersey, man. You got, you know, top three favorite NBA players of all time?
I mean, Steph is definitely up there. That's the homie, so I'm going to represent him. But at the same time, he is legendary. So I'm putting him up there. I'm also putting MJ up there. So, you know, whatever, all you LeBron fans, I'm not taking nothing away from LeBron. I'm just putting MJ up there as one of my top three. And then for me personally, it's Allen Iverson, just because of everything he represented culturally. So AI has to do.
Yeah. Nah, that's solid, man. Me and James, we both big NBA fans. So I always differentiate my top favorites and like the all time, you know, best. So my top three favorites are Kobe, D-Wade, and Steph. So it's good to see you got Steph jersey back there, man. That's solid.
See, I'm not even gonna jump on a Kobe bandwagon. God bless him. you know, like for his greatness. Like I recognize his greatness, but I was such a hater when he was alive because I was like, I was anti-Lakers. You know what I'm saying?
Like, who was your squad then? If you was anti-Lakers, who's your squad?
So to be honest with you, I ran with Golden State for sure. And I still do. I run with Golden State in the West and I run with Atlanta in the East. You know what I mean? So that's, you know, shout out to the Atlanta.
Oh, being solid, an Atlanta fan is tough work every year, but they did it this year though, boy.
You gotta be committed. Yeah. Atlanta don't really have fans. I mean, like it's me and my wife. We the only two real Atlanta fans.
To me, that's actually crazy though, because the city of Atlanta, like what they do for the culture and like everybody that lived there and the artists and all that. It's like, why people don't rock with the Hawks like that?
Cause you gotta, because it's like Atlanta's such a fair weather city. Everybody want to be part of the in crowd. And if your team ain't popping, it don't look good on your resume to be you know, to rock all right. with. You know what I'm saying? Gotcha. So I still rock with. Yeah.
Well, before we get out of here, man, we just want to finish up and say, well, one, we want to know what's next for you. And then two, how can the people follow you on social?
Yeah, right now, man, you know, I wrapped up a book called I'm Restored, where I talk a lot about mental health and fatherhood, which is great. We put a curriculum out along with that. So that's out right now. I'm Restored, how I lost my religion and gained my faith. I think it's a great tool for especially dads who've experienced some trauma. And then I'm working on music. So we should have some, you know, I'm working on the Church Clothes Volume 4. Which is a special project. I got some new music coming out this summer, a single with Jadena. And yeah, man, just cooking. So more on the way.
That's dope, man. You know, I think that's really big. We rooting for you on this side, man. And, you know, keep going, keep doing what you're doing, bro. It's been a pleasure and an honor to have this conversation, get to know you a little bit better today. And, you know, salute to you for being an amazing father, man. And I just hope that, you know, God continues to bless you and your family.
Appreciate y'all, man. Thank y'all. Appreciate what y'all doing as well.
Yeah, appreciate that, man. Like James said, we definitely happy to have you on today, man. Happy to have this conversation with you. Feel like we got to know a lot about you, man, and the things that you got going, who you are as a dad. We'd love to connect with you outside of this, man. We kind of touched on it a little bit before we started recording, but I think that book that you got going and the curriculum will be perfect alignment for our book club and the brothers on there who are looking to grow and build themselves up as Black men and Black fathers. So we'll definitely tap in with you outside of just this, you know, podcast episode, man, and make some things happen. Also, before we get out of here, we always ask our guests if they can, you know, potentially connect us with any more potential guests that we can have on. Do you got any guys in mind that you think would be good for this conversation?
Yeah, there's a handful of people I can think of, you know, right off the bat. My man BJ Thompson, who is a leadership coach, and a health fitness guru based here in Atlanta.
Okay.
Yeah, BJ Thompson. I'm trying to think who else is another great person off the top of my brain. Oh, you know, another one is Q Parker from 112. Like he's okay. I worked out at the gym with him and man, he is a phenomenal father. I've learned a lot from him, you know, because he's older than me. He's a step ahead of me. But man, he's really good. You can probably just hit him on a DM and he would do it. You know.
Okay.
So yeah.
All right. No, that's solid, man. We definitely appreciate that.
Hey, what's going on, y'all? This is Lecrae, and right now you are connected with the Dear Fathers Podcast, one of the best places to get great insight on what it means to be a father.
Thank y'all for listening to another impactful conversation on the Dear Fathers Podcast. It's your host, James Meeks.
And your co-host, Jesse Alex. But before we get out of here, make sure you subscribe anywhere you get your podcast, and we'll catch y'all next time. Salute.
My own CD cover. I'm so focused as Steven Glover. Still up and coming, but for sure coming. Went out on a limb like I broke something. Watch how he recover.